Officers, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this truth jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio. Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And good morning. This is Pat Rabbit with Not for Public Consumption. And we're here at Revolution Radio, and as you probably know, we're user-supported. It's not like the users assist. No. You support us. If it weren't for your support, we wouldn't be here. But we made this business model, which it really isn't, I don't guess, because there's no profit. But we've made this work for 11 years and into 5 months now, into the fifth month. So we make it easy to support us. You'll see the donation word at the top of the Chatsy page. And if you click that, you will see, if it ever opens up, there it goes. You will see that you can become a patron at Patreon, which is a good way to do it. It works very well, and you just click on it, and you set up an account. I'm not quite sure how it works, whether you put money in there or you just give them your card and they just take it out, but it works very well, and it seems pretty safe. So you tell them, well, I want to be giving $5 a month or whatever. It's up to you. Just set it up and tell them, and they will do just that. And they're very good at what they do. And then we have DonorBox. And DonorBox is for listeners who are across the Atlantic or across the Pacific. Europe, Asia, the Antipodean countries, such as Australia, New Zealand, or if you might be in the Philippines. Who knows? But you use that. I think it's a credit or debit card, too. I've never even clicked on it, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works. Then we have the same thing. It's called Direct Payment North America Only, which also implies to me that DonorBox may have to be used for South and Central America. But anyway, you use that, Direct Payment North America Only, and whip out your credit or your debit card and give us a little money. Then we have cryptocurrency, or we take it. We like to have it, and we deal in Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. And if none of those really appeal to you, you can use snail mail. And that's where you make out a money order, or you write a check, and you make it out to Revolution Radio. And you address your envelope to Terry Ackerman. As it sounds, you spell it, T-E-R-R-Y-A-C-K-E-R-M-A-N, Terry Ackerman. And she is and that's Lady Horse in chat, by the way. She's the treasurer. And then she's at 1793 North Eden Road. And Eden is spelled E-D-O-N, okay? If you misspelled it and put E-D-E-N, it would probably still get there, but I wouldn't suggest you do that. It's E-D-O-N, Road Allen, A-L-L-E-N, Allen, Michigan, M-I, and it's 49227. and just go have a look on the page and click on the donations. I want to say it's a tab, but it's not really a tab, but you click on the word and it opens up, you know, the archives and the donations and the store and everything else that's available. So that's how you can help us. And we have, for your pleasure, we have the archives, and they're free. Used to be you would subscribe to the archives, and it was a modest fee, maybe $5 a month or something, but now we just let you have them. So if you ever did that before, make sure and do not use your old password and username, okay? You're going to hit Enter Archives, and when you do that, you're going to see a little white box comes up the top, and the username is filled in, and in case you're interested, it's RevRadio, R-E-V-R-A-D-I-O, 8 characters. And the password happens to be, now remember, it's already there, at least in most cases, but the password happens to be ROCKS with an exclamation point, which will give you 6 characters. So you're going to have R-O-C-K-S, exclamation point. And then you hit the sign in button, and you're right into the archives. And then there is 2 ways you can deal with it. You can enter the archives and find your show by show name, not by host name, but by show name. You find it. And the reason for that is some hosts have more than one show, and those shows will have different names, so it wouldn't do to look up the host name. And you wouldn't find it. They're only listed by show name. And they're alphabetical, and they're easy to find, and there's probably 5-6 years worth, at least on some shows. I think my shows are going back 5.5 years or so. And you click on your show, and you download it to your computer, and you use your own player to get it going. Hey, how you doing? Is that Mace, huh? And if you don't like that, you can go back to the beginning. You're already in, but you don't take that route. You take the route that will say GUI, which is Graphic User Interface, and you use that. And there is a player there, so you find your show, and you click it, and it plays. So we make it easy. We make it easy to give, and we make it easy to listen to the archives. And then we have the store, the Zazzle store. And if you go there, you're going to find that we have a lot of nice things for you. A lot of the general suspects, t-shirts, bumper stickers, coffee mugs, mouse pads, baseball caps, whatever else you can expect to see. And they make great gifts too. Or for yourself. And we also have a new thing called the Coffee Club. And Ahmed, our general manager, he pulled this out of his mind. So, was it Aphrodite flying out of Zeus's forehead? Something like that. But anyway, we have the Coffee Club, and you get with him. We're asking all the hosts to get with Ahmed for a short, I would say 15-minute meeting with him. And you're together, and he opens up his screen, and you can see how he's making things, and he's very good. And I promise you, you will be happy with what you see, because you're going to now have a coffee cup with your show name on it and a really cool design. I have one of mine, and I like it. You can see I'm crawling halfway out of my rabbit hole. And it says, hop on down for not for public consumption with Pat Rabbit. And so that's kind of how they're made. I'm not sure how many we have now, but they are starting to add up. And if every host had one, it doesn't cost you anything, but if every host had one, when they sell, we get a little bit of the take, which is cool. And the product is very excellent. And then there's a choice of 11 ounces or 15 ounces. So get what you like. And there, you can go even bigger. They're turning into like beer stein looking things, but mine's a 15-ounce coffee cup, and that's a lot, as it turns out. And so we have that. And we're the biggest of the Internet stations, and we have about 90 hosts, and we have 2 studios, and we are grinding it out steadily, 60, 60, 24, 7, 52, and now 11 and 4 months. So when Mike Ringley dreamed this up, he pulled it out of his forehead, much like Zeus did, and plopped it into reality, and wow, here we still are. Even though, sadly, Mike passed away. That was Nighthawk. He passed away in September of 2019, and we still really miss him. I'm sure he's very aware that we're here and what we're doing. Okay, now, and thank you. Thank you in advance. So now, who's here? Who can I say hello to? Well, I see Mitzi, Meow, Flea Sees, The Red Pill, F-O-T-L. That's the initials of this show. It's called Fact or Theory Live. When I first met him, I thought he was calling the show Factor Theory Live, like a theory of factors, you know? But no, he set me straight. But anyway, we have Open Philosopher, Surrey Sunflower, Wally, Monster 383, our webmaster, Pat Rabbit, that's me, and if I look kind of weird, it's because I have my Cyrillic clothes on, and that's how you spell Pat Rabbit in Russian. And there's Crow One, WH Devo, Cat Dog Girl, Nestlemania, Maced 139. Now, I know it's May Street, but I just think Maced is cool, and so that's what I say. Amad, he's our general manager. Comet, Dirt, Blah, plus two. The Right Reverend, Dr. Mr. Rowe. Gino, 2017. Gerber, Melia. Popsicle Toes, Batsman. Blessing, In the Kitchen. And we have others who have left for the moment, but they'll likely be back. People come and go into chat, so that's to be expected. And I see Lone Gunman just came in. Hello, Lone Gunman. So, and I see Bill Johnson came into chat, too. So, hello to all. Let me see. I'm typing. You might be able to hear me. I'll finish in just a second. So, yeah, people are stacking in. We got 28 going. Yeah, for my show, that's par for the course. I don't pull in a huge chat room, and it's still, you know, it's only noon. And morning, Mitzi, how are you? So, that's everybody who's here at the moment, and some keep coming in, so that's all good. Now, I always take a look at what's going on upstairs before I get going. So, please allow me to do that. And take a quick sip. I couldn't live without this cranberry cocktail. I've been forced to buy the Ocean Spray lately, which really is the best. It's, I think it's $4.19. That's not too bad. It hadn't gone up much. Okay. The sun has entered the third decan of Taurus, 2146, and the moon is 3 degrees of Libra. Now that means that as the moon goes forward on Monday, I think it is, or very late Sunday night, we're going to have the full moon. And it will be, Saturn is at 2448 of Aquarius right now, and this full moon will be in a T-square with Saturn. Might be interesting. Also, as we approach about the 26th degrees of Taurus, it'll be in the 27th degree, but if something is 26 and change, we say 27th degree, because that's what you're moving to. That is where the fixed star Algol sits. It's an Arabic name, Algol, and it translates to the head of the Gorgon Medusa. And it is known to astrologers as the most evil star in the sky. So, now I'm not trying to be doomy or anything, but just to let you know. So we're going to have the sun fairly conjunct that opposing the moon, making a full moon, and those two will be squared to Saturn. Pretty close, within 1 degree, I think. If not, it's barely out of it. So that this is kind of actionable, especially the sun and moon, because their orbs are so big. Because when you do astrology and you're doing aspects, you may read books and they say, well, give a trine 3 degrees and give a square 4 or 5 degrees. Is that? No. It's the body itself that has the orb. Okay? And the sun has about 8 degrees either way. The sun's big and bright and yeah. And the moon, I would say, has about 6 degrees either way. It's pretty big and bright too. Besides, the moon is the lens. All aspects filter through the lens of the moon. Even if it's only the moon aspecting a planet, it will amplify that planet's energy. But if the moon comes up and contacts, say, a square between two other planets, well, then it will amplify that two planets' worth of energy. So we have that to think about. It will be a matter of what happened in the past when I'm on next. So just bear in mind, and I'll be reminding people in chat as it comes up, we have Mercury, and Mercury's retrograde. It started backing up. So for the next 3 weeks almost, because it's been doing it for about 2 or 3 days, so we got another almost 3 weeks to go. Mercury retrograde, sometimes it goes by and not much at all, and sometimes everything goes to hell. Has to do with communications, business, interactions between people, that's Mercury. Travel, short travel, it could, you know, influence that idea. Venus is 11 degrees of Aries. It's not doing a whole lot. Mars is 20 degrees of Pisces. It's not doing a whole lot. Jupiter, however, went into Aries night before last, Tuesday evening at 7:22 p.m. Jupiter entered Aries. It's been in Pisces now for the past bunch of months. And it's going to move up into Aries, and I forget exactly where, but then it's going to come to a halt, and it's going to start backing up, and it'll go back into Pisces for a while. Now, this retrograde motion, which is planets backing up, is all from our point of view, because it has everything to do with the orbit of the Earth and the orbit of the other planet. Generally, with the inner planets, at least, they go retrograde when they're on the same side of the sun as we are, because the Earth itself starts to overtake. It speeds up. It goes faster than, say, Mercury, which makes Mercury look like it's backing up. That's the whole idea behind retrograde motion. And Saturn is 24 degrees and 48 minutes of Aquarius. At least it's not in the same sign as Pluto anymore. We have Uranus at 15 degrees of Taurus, Neptune 24 Pisces, so it will be contacting the full moon also. The aspect will be a good one, but Neptune's never that good. Sometimes you'll hear, oh, Neptune's the higher octave of Venus and all this wonderful inspiration and artistic bullshit. That's all Venus. Neptune is escapism. Neptune is con men. Neptune is drug use because you're trying to escape reality with it and all that. And Pluto, finally, is 28.5 degrees of Capricorn. So it's not going to really be aspecting anything. It's kind of friendly to the full moon, but not close enough to be any sort of actionable thing to talk about. The node is in Taurus backing up. It will be sort of conjoining the sun in the full moon, and it's good because it is the north node, and the north node is a good contact. These are just points in the sky, but they're important. Chiron, I don't even talk about. Okay, so that's what I see going on upstairs for the moment. So look on late Sunday night, I think it is, very early Monday morning. I will tighten that up when I take a look, but I don't feel like doing that now. But that's going to be what we're dealing with the full moon. So there's that. Now, hi, Valerie. How are you? Okay, Bill. Sometimes headphones are better, actually. Now, let's see. Last night, I was listening to Bill Johnson. And he read this piece, or part of the piece. I don't know that he read the whole thing. He may have, because I wasn't looking at the piece while he was reading it, though I was listening, and it's very well written. And I think it's very correct, and it's worth hearing. It's a bit doomy, however, 'tis better to know than to not know. Maybe even then, something can be done. This is something by T.L. Davis. And he has his place on the Post and podcast, and it's on Substack. Substack, it appears, is a good place to read excellent pieces by good writers who are good thinkers also. And this is entitled Statistics of the Fall. Okay, Statistics of the Fall. And he commences. My silence over the past several days is the product of recognizing that there's no stopping the onslaught of Marxist, Stalinist future for the United States. A ministry of truth has been proposed and not been met with complete and total ridicule. While it's important to see events taking place, it's more important to know what you see, and what I see is a nation accepting and compliant of the coup, with patriots so conditioned to fear their own government that they're stymied into passivity. And yes, it has been a coup. They have infiltrated everything. Okay. Now, we continue. There is reason to fear their own government because it's trying to kill them in every possible way. To kill or effectively neutralize them with global government currency in the form of the digital dollar. The government's turned its back on every principle of freedom previously known. It's openly invited enemies of the people, including violent criminals and terrorists from abroad, onto our streets, and threatened suburban housewives and mothers with domestic terrorist charges. This is the end of America. It doesn't matter where it started, 100 years ago or just 2 years ago. It's here. And the large part of officialdom heralds it. Who doesn't approve? It's hard to tell, and will become impossible when all truth is delivered daily by the new and improved government spokesperson, the director of truth, as disseminated from official sources. And yet, Americans, the people I once thought had a full and complete understanding of the value of freedom, who recognized it as the force that drove economics, that led to innovation and invention and thus created strength and wealth, cling only to what they have left and do not care enough for what they've lost. In future days, they'll turn over the keys to their once private property and shrug while they stand in line for their government-issued apartment, completely 100% monitored at all times from militant activity in order to protect the regime from any possible resistance. And they will say, it's just how it is now. At least I'm still free, you know, because I'm an American. In truth, this has already happened. It's just that they're still free. Funding their own imprisonment. Most cling to the idea of a 2022 election when everything's gonna change. If it takes place at all, it'll be a stone in the pocket of a man jumping off a cliff. Do I want to see a win? Sure, I'd like to see some congressional hearings over all of the things that have taken place and maybe someone pay for the wholesale destruction of the nation I once had every reason to treasure, based on principles that lit a fire in my heart and kept me writing this blog and things like it for decades. In the end, however, someone else going to jail doesn't put one more ounce of freedom in my life. I want freedom, and when one considers what that means, what would have to change in order to get that back, the enormity is overwhelming. The plans and designs of thousands upon thousands of government goons would have to be ripped out by the root and cast off. The internet would have to be changed to accommodate absolute anonymity. The information storehouses all over the world would have to be destroyed. There would have to be an economic meltdown that made 2008 look like a down day on the Dow, and a return to commodity-based currency. Most recognize that this is not possible, short of a revolution, maybe not even then. The world has moved towards data retention, examination, and exploitation. It'll take decades before they figure out the folly of it, the abuses inherent to it, the full weight of destruction caused by it. But that's the future for someone else to suffer. The world at this level of debt, at this level of surveillance, at this level of deception is not sustainable. And sooner or later, the inhabitants of this rock will suffer all that is possible before the true criminals are recognized and torn to shreds by the victims of their arrogance. What I recognize, that many others do, is that there is an extermination event shaping up in the Western world, because it's become the dumping ground for the world's refuse. It's a human landfill. The people coming here now are coming to take the safety, the clean streets, the nice stores and ease of life without paying for it, without working for it, and they will get, in the end, what they left. The people of the Western world are too rich, too safe, and too easily manipulated to stop it, to save themselves because of the optics of selfishness. World history is a story of extermination, but usually from a greater power, a more technological society than the one being conquered. The Western world will be one of the few instances of cooperative annihilation of self-conquered societies. What rational instances of self-defense exist do not exist in abundance. That's not to say that there are none in America willing to go to battle for these principles, but not enough. And there's not enough leadership to direct their efforts along a rational path to victory. Even if it weren't victorious, the option to go down fighting rather than begging is a valid enough goal for many. But the opposition to the extermination event are too scattered, too individualistic in many instances to recognize that only in temporary subordination is their ultimate freedom. So they watch the erection of their own gallows with only moments of distracted interest until their attentions are pulled to daily mundane matters. Once totalitarianism gets to a certain point, i.e., proposing a ministry of truth as a part of government operations, it cannot be stopped short of all-out battle. In the absence of that, darkness falls on the Western Empire forever, and we're all just statistics of the fall. Say two. That's it. And I thank Bill Johnson for bringing that to my attention. It's very well written. There's a lot of looming truth in it if something isn't done. There's so much going on in other parts of the world at this time that how easily this will slide into place is yet to be seen. Or maybe we get lucky and enough people wake up and say no. But something tells me it's not going to be pretty any way you look at it. So we have that, and I'm sure I saved it. Let me make sure. Yep, I sure did. I always check and make sure I bookmark something before I cross it out and get it off the page. So, yeah, you're right, Flea. Excuse me. Okay. Now, there is bunches of stuff. Things are really heating up lately in the Donbass, and which is the Luhansk People's Republic and the Donetsk People's Republic and all of that area, and Kharkov and Kherson and Zaporozhye and Odessa. And I did read last night in Telegram that the Russians are bringing lots of missile batteries to bear up at their border, right close to where a lot of the trouble north of Kharkov is happening, because there aren't enough Russian forces there at the moment to effectively quash this. And hopefully all the Westerners, much of the Western stuff, as is tried to be gotten into Ukraine, will be vaporized by the Russians before anything can happen. I also read that's the reason that they don't annihilate all the tracks. They leave a couple open because it's easier to see what's trying to be gotten in that way. And by the way, we have a new chat room. And this new chat room is really pretty cool. Typically, I'm so into what I'm doing at any one given time that if I see something come up, I almost feel like I'm dragged, kicking and screaming to it. But actually, I have to say, it's really pretty cool. So, I highly recommend it. And Mr. Rowe puts the chat room in a lot into the chat. So, well, I don't know about going up against Alex Jones, but whatever, you know, you have your choice, and that's what's so neat about this station. You have your choice. Sometimes, depending upon what I like, now and again, I have two shows, both of which I like, and they're on at the same time on A and on B. And then now we've got the Hawk's Nest running too, and so we have interesting things coming to there betimes. And so, not to speak of whatever else we might get going, but we're barely scratching the surface of the new chat room, and it's amazing what you can do in it. You can go to Telegram, you can go to Twitter, you can go to other places like YouTube, and if you see a good video that you like, it's not too long, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 minutes even, you can drag and drop it right into the new chat, and it'll come up. It'll take a bit to load. It downloads to your computer at the same time. So if you want to clear space, you might consider cleaning that up after a while before too much space gets used on your hard drive. But if you do that, the what it is that you put in the new room won't go away when you do that, because it's also downloaded into the room's systems. So that's kind of cool, actually. I was kind of worried about that. But that's what Mr. Rowe told me. It should be okay. And I think Richard told me that, too. So we're going to be good there. And there's just lots of different. You can have conferences. You can have video help for your show. Unfortunately, I don't have a camera. This new 27-inch screen, this Lenovo, is really a nice screen, but there's no built-in camera. And so I'll have to fork over for a camera that maybe, a small camera, I can maybe clip on the top of the screen or something. And that way I'll get into the play. But, okay. Pardon me. I hope everybody's good this morning. Now, I think I'm going to hop over. This is Pat Rabbit. I do hop over to the Saker. On my show here, which is not for public consumption, I'm sure the public doesn't listen to mine. And there are a couple of them that I want to look at. And there's a sit rep here, and it is the newest one, I think. It is from Tuesday? No, it's from yesterday. It's from yesterday, the 11th of May. And it's Where Are We? To get a fairly comprehensive overall picture of what's going on there, as I try to decongest myself so I can talk. Pardon me just a second. Well, no, not quite, but I'll be getting there. Anyway, this is for the Saker blog by Saker staff. In case you're wondering what a Saker is, it's a kind of falcon, okay? And, of course, this site in this room is totally pro-Russian, as I am. So that's all good. I think many of us here are, too. It's because the West, the NATO West, has come to represent everything that is evil. There hasn't been a fight between good and evil on this level since Atlantis went down 11,500 years ago, because only at that point had it gotten global to, for the most part, not entirely, but for the most part. And I need to remember to make a couple of notes about something I was talking about last night. But let's see what the Saker has here. The main observation, which one cannot help but agree with, comes from Andrei Martynov, and I rephrase somewhat. The rate of change is markedly accelerating as the first result of the crumbling and implosion of the Ukraine as a state and the structure of its armed forces. Things will go quicker now, and they are, as discussed further. And just as an aside also, this is written by generally Russian speakers. Even if they're writing in English, the fact that they speak Russian as a main language will influence their writing style. So if you're interested in Russia, that's where you might pick up in Russian language. You may notice that you can hear a few little odd things in the phrasing, in the syntax. Well, that's where this comes from, and I think it's fascinating, personally. But anyway. First, though, pure fantasy. We call it narrative. But it's fantasy. This was found on the Ukrainian site. And there's a little telegram link there, but that's neither here nor there. But it continues. Take a look at a few things here. The U.S. influence. The fantasy of being the Robin Williams character in the movie Good Morning Vietnam. And the fantasy of being the gook. These fighters live in a movie. And then the breakdown of the fantasy. This is another example of exactly what Martynov means. And here's a quote. And there's some off-color words in the quote, but it's in context, so I'm going to read what I see on the page. Disclaimer. Look, lads, what a three-loop system of defensive management in Ukraine is emerging. Learn, it's rare to see such carefully orchestrated chaos. The first category is the Nazis plus the SBU, which is their secret police in Ukraine. We have no fucking idea if there is centralized control there, but we are sure that Azov and all kinds of other nationalist battalions or army units are weakly or not at all subordinate. As usual, they do their cowboy shit or sit in a bunker. The second category is under the control of our dear allies. They have saddled the GUR, which is the Chief Directorate of Intelligence of the Ministry of Defense of Ukraine, the SSO, Special Operations Forces, what's left of the Air Force, and the most capable missile and artillery units. This part of the AFU, Armed Forces of Ukraine, as we all know, is waging a real network-centric small group war and doing most of the damage to the Mokshas, which word is a Finno-Ugric ethnicity native to Russia, used as a racial slur by Ukrainians. This is all very fucking great, but it leads to a strategic dead end. We'll explain why later. The third category is the bulk of the AFU, the regular waste oil in the fortifications, and that part of the territorial defense, the majority, which lacks the soul or charismatic leader controlled by SBU to get into Category 1. Or the skills to get into Category 2. These suicide bombers report to the general staff and other army leadership, and they have the honorable task of dying while the allies, with the help of Category 2, win the war. And in parentheses it says, actually, no. Continues. In short, we have no unified leadership, nor a supply, nor a general intent for the war. The opinion of a pimply cocksucker who recently graduated from the United States Military Academy and can't control his bladder under fire, and it has, in parenthesis here, real story, means more than the opinion of a Ukrainian colonel. Good morning, Vietnam. It sucks to be a gook. There's a little quote, I think it's coming out of Telegram, but Andrei or whoever's writing it, it's whoever's writing it picks it up. We stay for a moment in fantasy. Andrei Martynov commented on Lieutenant General Kellogg, who, contrary to his statement about everything he learned about war, never learned shit. A quick comparison of the U.S. and the U.K. commentary on Putin's speech. Here we have U.K. Defense Secretary Ben Wallace. This can only be classified as repugnant, and if Kellogg, according to Martynov, never learned shit, this one only talks shit. A short snippet. Quote, I thought about the scale of their ordinary Russian soldier suffering across the Soviet Union, but also how the suffering was used then, as it is now, to cover up the inadequacy of those ruling in safety and comfort from behind the Kremlin walls above and within the general staff nearby. End quote. Foreign Minister Baerbock has no idea what she is saying, and her grasp of history is non-existent, where she says, Germany is responsible for the defense of Ukraine and all of Europe, end quote. Zelensky, beside his, now this is back to the article, Zelensky, beside his other problems, is tone deaf. And here's a quote from a Twitter where it says, "So, President Zelensky congratulates Ukraine on V-Day over Nazism, or Nazism, I guess, featuring a soldier who wears the Totenkopf, which is the grinning skull, deadhead, a symbol of the elite Nazi division of the Waffen-SS during World War II. After complaints, the press service replaced the photo, but the original was there for 30-plus minutes." And the writer picks it up. "They are not ashamed any longer. They say it in the open." And we have more Twitters here where it is said, quote, "We are using the Ukrainians for the time being as proxies. We potentially face an economic cataclysm in the U.S. Inflation is inevitable. We have this long-running move towards the border of Russia. The boys from Davos plot out, the future of the world," end quote. That was Senator Richard Black. And the writer picks it up. And then moving from fantasy, we have the voices of realism. This is the Chinese view. In his Victory Day speech on Monday, Russian President Vladimir Putin calmly but firmly stated that Russia had to take preemptive actions in its special operation in Ukraine, as NATO had created an absolutely unacceptable threat at Russia's borders. According to Chinese analysts, the speech was delivered in a restrained manner to send a clear signal to the West that Russia will not accept intensified pressure to squeeze Russia's strategic space. But at the same time, showed Putin was leaving some room for negotiation. End quote. Here's another one. U.S. Embassy in China is mocked by Chinese netizens after comparing Russia with Nazi Germany. And that was that little quote. Now the article picks up again. "We have to accept that the Ukraine was meant as a new Afghanistan. Take a look. The U.S. Department of Defense has claimed credit for westernizing the Ukrainian military by giving it training and weapons to oppose Russia, according to spokesman John Kirby. However, the results of the effort made over the past 8 years apparently took by surprise even the U.S.'s own military intelligence," he implied in an interview with Fox News on Tuesday. U.S. officials had expected the imminent capture of Ukraine's capital during the first days of the conflict with Moscow. Kirby went on to fantasize. The spokesman said military intelligence by nature is a mosaic that officers try to piece together, sometimes coming to erroneous conclusions. He then went on to compliment the Department of Defense and the administration of President Joe Biden for a job well done preparing Ukrainian troops to fight against Russia. Narrative is a good word for this, but using the word fantasy is better. So in the broader commenting environment, everyone comments on Mr. Putin, but Russia has lost the propaganda war. Who was it that said all press is good press? We end with Mr. Lavrov in one of his latest pressers, where he said, "The completion of the special operation will force the West to stop promoting a unipolar world under the dominance of the U.S. The end of the special operation in Ukraine will contribute to the cessation of Western attempts to undermine international law. The Russian Federation is interested in all civilians leaving the zones of the special operation in Ukraine. The UN Secretary General missed the opportunity to achieve a peaceful settlement in Ukraine. Thus, Sergei Lavrov, who I think is the greatest statesman today. To continue the article. A little more realism with a document that you can use for your friends and family would be this one. So if the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Israel says there are Nazis in the Ukraine, just perhaps there are. A document that you may use for your friends, and you can click on that here. Returning for a moment to Martynov's statement, let's add something to it. The rate of change is markedly accelerating as the first result of the crumbling and implosion of the Ukraine as a state and the structure of its armed forces. In addition, the fantasy narrative has become so ludicrous that it is showing clear signs of crumbling. Okay, the next part of the article is entitled Line of Contact. This is a to-and-fro scenario. Bear in mind, this is the line that had 8 years to dig in, dreaming of killing all Russians in the Donbass regions. Russian forces over this very long line are using various artillery to soften up, remove, and kill Ukrainian forces. The Russians maneuver continuously against the dug-in fighters. But they are not throwing good fighting soldiers against a hard wall. They retreat, bring in the heavy artillery, and move in again. And then they break through. Units of the People's Militia of the Luhansk People's Republic, supported by the armed forces of the Russian Federation, have completed mopping up a Papaznaya from nationalists and broken through the deeply echeloned enemy defense and reached the administrative border of the Luhansk People's Republic. Yesterday morning, Ridovka, which is a big telegram channel and it prints all in Russian, so I got to use the translate function, but that one I like. There's a couple of others. Rybar is another one that does just that. But anyway, yesterday morning, Ridovka reports that the whole theater is calmer at the moment, but these skirmishes and softening up and maneuver happens continuously. And here's some Twitters of typical frontline battles. In the meantime, on the Ukrainian side, this is what is happening. Territorial defense fighters complain about being sent to the front. Militants of the 101st Territorial Defense Brigade from the Transcarpathian region complain that they were sent to the front line in the Luhansk People's Republic. According to them, the formation was created to protect checkpoints in the rear and is not intended for combat operations. The militants have no military training. Many of them complain about health problems. The militants believe that they will become a target for Russian artillery. It should be noted that the units of the 101st Troop Brigade were transferred to the front line only 3 days ago, but they are already experiencing problems with morale. Recall that today was also a protest action organized by relatives of militants from the 103rd Troop Brigade from the Lvov region. And I have seen some telegrams with videos of that on them. And I'm going to stop right here because I'm about to get dung out by the little bells or sound that stands in for sweetly chiming bells. And so this is Pat Rabbit with Not for Public Consumption. And we have a lot for you today. Coming up after me, we have Willow Andreasen. This is on A now. We have Willow Andreasen, and then we'll have the Mechanic and Deacon John and the Fetch, the New American Dream Boys, and then we'll have the Ice Age Conversations, and then we got roundtables. And after me on B, because I'm on B, we're going to have Mona Radler. We're still playing some files. I don't know what they are because I never listened to them. And then we'll have Mario, and then we'll have Mr. Rowe, and then we'll have... Who is it? J. Charles Parker. Then we have another roundtable, probably Mechanic. I think, I'm not sure. They've been doing Wednesday nights and Friday nights, and maybe Thursday nights. I'm not sure. Stick around and find out. Best thing. I'm young. Thank you. And so do stick around because we have things for you all the time, all the time. And we've been at this a while, so we've honed our skills, and we try to bring you the best that we possibly can from all the different angles to give you a good, clear, well-rounded picture of things. And we have many hosts that know their stuff and do it to the best of their ability, and that's all you can expect from anybody. To do something to the best of their ability. The creative function in full spate. Right? But anyway, I hear something. I'll be right back.
It's no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Are you interested in the paranormal? Murder mystery. Real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's hyper thinking. Welcome to the Crypt.
You going back in?
There's still men out there. God damn. When I go home, people ask me, "Hey, Hoot, why do you do it, man? Why? You some kind of war junkie?" I won't say a goddamn word. Why? They won't understand. They won't understand why we do it. They won't understand it's about the men next to you. And that's it. That's all it is.
Revolution Radio. FreedomSlips.com. Number one listener-supported radio. The printing press for freedom at a time when freedom is needed the most.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Okay. I almost got it down. A little break. Some bread and butter. It'll all be down to the hatch in just a second. And this is Pat Rabbit. But not for public consumption. The general public has no use for my output, I'm sure. Do I care? No. But anyway, this is Revolution Radio, and we're found at revolution.radio, and we're found at freedomslips.com. We don't want freedom to slip. We'll turn that into freedom's lips. I'm wondering if Nighthawk was aware of the double entendre he came out with when he did. But... maybe we can ask Alitas. She might know. Because we are in touch with her. So, and we get by on your donations. So please keep those coming if you like what you hear. Now, where did I stop? Okay. It picks up again. What I'm reading from the Saker, and it's the SITREP, which is Situation Report. And it says, back to creating brutal, costly, and bloody fantasy. From the Russian Ministry of Defense. According to reliable information, the Kiev regime has carried out another bloody action in Kharkov region, based on the Bucha scenario. Six civilian vehicles with white flags mounted on them were shot at by AFU soldiers on a stretch of road between Stary and Novy Saltov. The photo and video footage of this heinous crime was made by specialists from the AFU's Center for Information and Psychological Operations. If that just don't say it all. In addition, from the area of private houses in Belaya Krynitsa, Kherson region, the Ukrainian Armed Forces artillery struck several positions of the Russian Armed Forces in order to provoke retaliatory fire on a residential building with civilians, on residential buildings with civilians, whom the territorial defense fighters are not letting out of the blockaded settlement by holding them as a human shield. We warn in advance that these and other materials fabricated by the Kiev regime about alleged Russian atrocities are soon to be widely spread through the Western and Ukrainian media as well as online resources. And these are the ones, this time, standing ready to record the fantasy and play it to an unsuspecting public. And he puts in parenthesis, I wonder if they will pay for the privilege. Meanwhile, the Norwegian media representatives were present in Belaya Krynitsa for a photo and video recording of allegedly indiscriminate Russian strikes against civilians. Odessa. We had some spectacular firing on Odessa and environments. You see, there was this hotel where the head honchos of the Ukrainian forces were stationed. And close to that was a shopping mall used as an ammunition depot. We can take one comical moment. The special forces of the DPR, Donetsk People's Republic Army, tracked down the headquarters of one of the artillery units of the armed forces of Ukraine in the Donetsk direction. After waiting for their commanders to gather at headquarters, an ATGM was struck. After the surviving Ukrainians running out of the headquarters turned out to be naked, it became clear what their gunners were doing at meetings. Now the world community will accuse our side of mass killing of LGBT people. Boy, man. Unreal. The worse it gets, the better it gets for the West. The West is so decadent. So fucking decadent. That's all good. I got a problem with that. So does Russia. Snake Island. And so do many others, too. More fantasy propaganda. This one did not survive the fantasy. Ex-commander of Ukraine's 10th Naval Aviation Brigade, Colonel Igor Bedzai, announced dead by the Ukrainian media. He was one of Ukraine's top pilots, often flying missions in AD-contested areas. The pilot died on May 7th. It appears that he was piloting one of the helicopters that were shot down over Snake Island, the very same ones Ukraine claimed were Russian. This is a real curious little thing. First, it was maintained. There's this helicopter that you can see being blown to pieces. And I think it was, I can't tell where it was with respect to the ground. And they were letting soldiers off who were getting into combat stances, which if they were Russians, they wouldn't be doing because the Russians have control of Snake Island. That in itself, the whole thing was a debacle for Ukraine. But then it was said, no, that was wrong. That helicopter really was a Russian helicopter. Then after a day or so, it came back. No, it was a Ukraine helicopter. I'm still not sure, but we'll see. Okay, here's the next bullet point. The Kiev regime's mindless PR campaign to seize Snake Island on the eve of Victory Day resulted in the senseless deaths of more than 6 Ukrainian fighters and members of the elite AFU units, the loss of 4 aircraft, 10 helicopters, 3 boats, and 30 unmanned aerial vehicles. I believe there were over 50 killed, and the Russians are still collecting them as they float up to the shore. There was supposed to be at least one high-ranking American in there. Ah, you can tell. They got Americans fighting, directing troops, figuring out moves, and getting shot by Russians. I don't know what's wrong with these people. I can't figure it out. Okay. To continue. Trying to outshine the Russian 9th military parades by the Ukrainian Snake Island fantasy was a comical error. The Russians are burying Yuki corpses floating up from the ocean. Intel Slava Z, who's very good on Telegram, I can attest, reports this morning, be very aware that this is non-verified. That's in parentheses. Then it continues. On Snake Island, English and American high-ranking officers disappeared during the landing. For their sake, the Ukrainian military fought for 2 days. But it was not possible to return the officers, or at least their bodies. According to our source in the general staff, an American Marine Lieutenant Colonel, as well as an English major from the Commando Brigade of the Marine Corps, landed on Snake Island together with Ukrainian fighters. They coordinated the work of NATO intelligence assets and the Ukrainian landing forces. Both officers landed in the first wave. But then the Russians shot down 3 helicopters and 1 landing craft was sunk. The remaining boats withdrew, leaving the first wave of landing on the shore. According to our source, London and Washington demanded that Zelensky make every effort to return their officers. Despite several attempts to re-land on the island, it was not possible to find out the fate of the English and American Marines. It is assumed that they died in battle with the Russians, but so far, as our source says, there is no confirmation of this information. It is possible that both were captured. In turn, the attempt to return their bodies cost the Ukrainian forces several planes and helicopters shot down, as well as several dozen dead Marines and special forces. Life is horribly cheap for the Ukrainians. Every day, it's anywhere from 300 to 500 Ukrainian soldiers wiped, as well as tons of war materiel, tanks. I bet the tank number is past 3,000 now. It was 2,998 last night. That's a lot of tanks. Okay, Azovstal. There's a picture here. Some good little videos here, and I've watched them, of course, and you can pick them up here and there. If you're using Telegram, you're going to see some of the best stuff because it's not censored and it just keeps coming. It's coming in fast. However, if you have a bunch of sources like I do, I think I have maybe 25 sources right now, you'll see that many of the same things are seen, which makes sense. They share things around. That's all good. That's fine. But in case you ever noticed, you probably come to that conclusion yourself. But anyway, the head of the Donetsk People's Republic, Pushilin, said, there are no civilians left at Azovstal, so our hands are untied. Back to Martin Yov's truism. One of his commentators did a chart of Russian strikes. There's a lot here. Thousands. And I'm sure the Russians have 10 times that much unused. And their factories are grinding out more. They have every raw material, every resource you can imagine. So they are so self-contained and comfortably self-contained that they can do all this, no problem. It's the West that's cutting off its nose, biting its face, and blowing holes in its foot. That's deliberate. Okay. Let's get some help from Geroman. That's not a name I've seen yet. Pardon me. Let's get some help from Geroman and assess the Russian strikes. It says here, I don't know if it's a quote or not, it just says here, you guys have no idea how much damage Russia causes daily with air defense, ballistic, cruise, and air-to-ground missiles. Every day, the Russian Ministry of Defense runs a briefing and moves on. I will let you know what got destroyed today. This was a day ago, so I guess that would be Tuesday. So you understand the scope of Ukrainian losses. Let's parse the Russian MOD report of a day ago. And all these, there's 9 different points. Number 1, unspecified number of Ukrainian helicopters destroyed on the ground by an Onyx missile in Artsy's, which is in the Odessa region. 2, ammunition depot destroyed near Gokhov. 3, MLRS Merch and 1 S-300 in the Bohodukov area. 4, air defense shot down 2 MiG-29s in Iverskoy and Novodonetskoy. 5. 1 Sukhoi 25 shot down near Pogonovka in the Kharkov region. 6. UAVs, those are your drones, shot down near Snake Island, included 2 Bayraktar 2 TB2s. Excuse me, they're TB2s. 7. UAV shot down in Balaklaya, Shikovka, Goptovka, Kamienka, Avivka, and a few other places. Then it's got 8 U.S.-supplied counter-battery radar destroyed in Zolotoy. However, that's not the number 8 because this coming up here is number 8. MLRS Grad and 2 command posts near Popozna, which is also known as Popoznaya. 9. Russian MLRS and artillery hit 26 command posts, 26 artillery units in firing positions, and 211 areas of manpower and equipment concentration, resulting in up to 350 kills. That's a daily number. It's unreal. And not only that, the morale is just, the floor is falling out of the morale. Many, they're surrendering en masse. They were sent to the front and they were not trained correctly. They do not have the equipment. Guns. Not enough bullets in the guns if they have a gun. It just goes on and on and on. It's wholesale slaughter, which is truly sad. Truly sad. I don't blame Russia for it. All they got to do is stop, but they won't. So I don't see how they have much of a choice. I'm not near as bloodthirsty as I may make myself sound sometimes. I'm just trying to put this out. And then the writer says, this was in one day. It happens literally every day. And you have to kind of go back and scratch your head and say, damn, the Ukrainian had a lot of stuff. It's just as well, I can wipe it out. But okay. And in the background, Russian engineers have completed humanitarian demining of Kamyanka, Izium district of the Kharkov region. And they still have time to give us footage of S-300V anti-aircraft missile system and IGLA manned portable missile system operators in action. They also have time to hand out humanitarian aid. Can you feature Russia giving literally thousands and thousands of tons of humanitarian aid, doing things like Bucha and the newer one near Kharkov? Doesn't the lie just scream at you? How is it that people don't get it? It's insane. There's a level of hypnosis that's unmatched. Okay, here's today's early Ministry of Defense report. Be yesterday, the 11th. The armed forces of the Russian Federation continue the special military operation in Ukraine. During the night, operational, tactical, and army aviation have hit 93 assets, including two command posts, 69 areas of manpower, and military equipment concentration, as well as three ammunition depots of the Ukrainian armed forces. Missile troops and artillery units have hit 407 areas of manpower and artillery equipment concentration, destroying 13 command posts, four positions of OSA AKM anti-aircraft missile systems, and 14 ammunition depots. The attacks have resulted in the elimination of more than 280 nationalists and up to 59 armored and motor vehicles. Russian air defense means, that's a weird way to put it, air defense means, have shot down 9 Ukrainian unmanned aerial vehicles, 4 near Balaklaya in the Kharkov region, 3 near Rubiznoya in the Lugansk region, 1 near Snake Island, and 1 Bayraktar TB2 near Arkhangelskoy. There's got to be a different rhythm in that, though. Arkhangelskoy? I don't know. In Nikolaev region overnight. For minute details, look here. There's Rydkova I'd mentioned earlier. Moon of Alabama, also very good. The Moon of Alabama has also a good lineup here. And there's a link. With all of the above, of the many testimonies from Ukrainian soldiers that their commanders are just deserting and abandoning them in the field, we may see a quick collapse. What is quick? I don't know. There you go. There's that sit rep, the newest one. I'm going to read something that may get some hackles up. I don't know. Maybe it won't. I saw this. And I had to say, yeah, you know, I agree with this. And call the little rabbit names and stuff. I don't know. But one of the Telegram channels is Zrada. I think it's Z. I spelled it X. Z-R-A-D-A-X-A. It says Zrada 22 on Telegram. Okay. Now, Mr. Rose putting news in the room too, which I always appreciate. Okay. Now, where am I? Back to notes. Put it in my notes. From Zrada 22 Telegram. LOL. After I merely shared my opinion, whoever this guy is, and he's probably Russian, that, quote, Director of National Intelligence, end quote, or a Minister of Defense, is not a job for a woman. I started to see some comments from enraged idiots of both sexes who accused me of bigotry, misogyny, etc. Honestly, I can't care less. I also think that a ballet dancer isn't a job for a man. And that there's some professions that are more male or more female. So what? First of all, it's my opinion. I see nothing sexist in this. You don't like it? Get lost. Reminds me of retarded freaks who claim that a man can get pregnant, etc. Men and women are not equal. not in the sense that men or women are better, but in the sense they are not equal. Exceptions prove the rule. A is not better than B, and A doesn't equal B. Not hard to understand this. Guess what? I also believe trans folks are deeply ill people who need to be isolated from society. Feminists in their present form are crap. They don't protect women's rights, but try to make a woman something she is not. I don't like the topic and never discuss it, actually. But sometimes you just have to say something, because there's too much of this shit around us. Period. And that's what he says. And hey, I agree with him. And there's some other things that I put down here on the page that, and then I want to get to something else in a minute, but this has to do with the Admiral Makarov. And I'm not sure when I put this in, but if I enlarge it, I'll read it in a minute. For some reason, my notes come out with the smallest text. Okay, from Rybar Telegram, according to the allegedly wrecked frigate Admiral Makarov near Zmini Island, everything is fine with the warship. The launch of the Neptune may have been, but there was no sinking of the ship. The frigate was afloat. As early as April 22nd, we wrote that the frigate Admiral Makarov was designated as target number one. And now in the media space, they begin to disperse another virtual victory, which does not exist. Okay, here's another one. I got several of these yesterday off Telegram. On Snake Island, English and American high-ranking officers disappeared during the landing. For their sake, the Ukrainian military fought for 2 days, but it was not possible to return the officers, or at least their bodies. According to our source in the general staff, an American Marine Lieutenant Colonel, as well as an English major from the Commando Brigade of the Marine Corps, landed on Snake Island together with the Ukrainian fighters. And that's probably the same thing I just read, because the writer of the article probably copied this from the same place I did. And I'm not sure where, because I don't put the sources. I just drag them in. Okay. It continues. They coordinated the work of NATO intelligence assets and the Ukrainian landing forces. Both officers landed in the first wave. But then the Russians shot down 3 helicopters and 1 landing craft was sunk. The remaining boats withdrew, leaving the first wave of landing on the shore. According to our source, London and Washington demanded that Zelensky make every effort to return their officers. And it's almost exactly what I just read, so I'll leave it at that. But, let's see. I think I copied that from the article I read this morning. Well, this looks like an interesting one. I'm going to see how large I can get it. I wish, maybe I'd have to figure out a place where I can put it elsewhere too and then enlarge it there. Okay, one more time. Let's see, where are you? View. Zoom in. See what we got. Yeah. Okay, this is it. It's getting bigger slowly. Bear with me. It seems to be pretty good. Okay, it says, in 2014, almost all Ukraine's army and police stationed in Crimea shifted sides without a shot. And now they fight in the ranks of the Russian army because they saw what was happening. In 2014, some 87% of Ukrainian militaries in Crimea shifted sides. A few remained loyal to Ukraine. So there started the army and police reform in Ukraine, carried out under U.S., U.K. supervision. It lasted 8 years and produced some results. Some 40% of officers in Ukraine's mainland were fired. Then new officers were trained, selected out of the most committed nationalists. Oh, dear. So what is it now, Ukraine's army, and how it functions? Oh, so what is now the Ukraine's army and how it functions? The lower rank, mostly conscripted peasants, cannon fodder. They are brought to the front line and left there. Since the Russians fight mostly by artillery, many of them die in trenches without even seeing the Russians. I was reading something similar, but this is worded a little different. There may be more details. The middle rank, committed nationalists, the officers of the middle rank, they don't stay at the front line, but command military units from a distance or from fortified underground constructions. The upper rank, U.S. and British generals who deliver information to the middle rank directly, give orders on relocations, changing positions, advance or retreat. And surely there are also Ukraine's defense minister, general staff or stuff, and the president, but they have just representation function at ceremonies or producing videos to get sympathy. And this is in parentheses. This link in wartime is an extra institution, which only hampers the speed of reaction. Yeah, he's right. This link up, the way it's done. It's by Dmitry Kovalevich in Kiev. He wrote that. And a few more little blurbs I got last night. But yeah, like I said, last count, Ukraine is down 2998 tanks, just two to go. The U.S. Embassy vehicle in Moscow is driving around with a Z painted on its roof. I saw the video. It is. And this is from Donbass Devushka, great Telegram channel. Severodonetsk is becoming a nightmare situation for Ukraine. Soon, if not already, it will be completely cut off from resupply. And this is something the first thing that I mentioned earlier I have, it's Russia has pulled all rocket launchers to the borders of Ukraine. Massive missile strikes expected. And like I say, I believe they're talking about the area north of Kharkov. And finally, this is not good. This is real, big time, not good. You may have heard it. You may know what I'm getting at here, but let's see what I have to offer you. Finland and Sweden will apply to NATO in the coming days, as the Reuters assures, and he says international news agency, which we know, as Reuters assures the alliance will quickly grant them membership. And then in big letters, the writer says, definitely don't care about world peace. No. Sweden is, I don't know, it's just kind of pointless. In a way, of course it matters. It's better if they're not, but still. But Finland shares a border with Russia. If Finland gets into NATO, I mean, there's already, I think, some of the Baltic, at least two, I think, of the Baltic states, if not all of them, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, I think they're in NATO, and they're slammed up against Belarus for the most part, maybe some of it Russia, too. But, I guess, you know, they've kind of worked that out. But to do this, for Finland to do this right now, at this time, under all these circumstances, is really dabbling with insane. It's not a good idea. I'm sorry. Everyone knows this. Scott Ritter did a real good YouTube on this the other day. It's about 40 minutes. Generally, he puts out these 2-minute YouTubes, but this one was like 40 minutes. And he really gets into it. Everything you can think of, every reason why this is the dumbest idea you've ever heard. Yeah. So, We'll have to watch that. That is just big time not good. So we'll see. We'll see what goes on there. Now, there was one more thing. Oh, yeah. When I was talking about the gypsies last week, that whole article and that, it sort of makes a correspondence between the gypsies and the Khazarians because they're so absolutely alike in their behavior, more so than anyone else of ancient Eastern European history, ancient back to the 700s or something. Well, and they were trying to equate something about where some of these people came from, and they made a statement that kind of ran like, Slavic people of obviously Asiatic origin. Well, they're not of Asiatic origin like the Mongols or anything like that. Though I mentioned at the first part of the show, the ancient records do say how Caucasian man, Aryan man, did essentially develop in Central Asia. But this would have been a good million years back. Boku years, believe me, a long time. And then there were Caucasian-style people on Atlantis because people move around, too. The ancient Druids weren't gigantic people with six fingers and, you know, all that. But anyway, it would make sense if some of the Slavic words seem to correspond to Sanskrit. But it's not that they came from Sanskrit. It's that the roots of the Slavic words and Sanskrit come from a common mother. And that would have been the civilizations that lived there very anciently. Long time ago. So, excuse me. So I wanted to mention that before I forgot. This is Pat Rabbit with Not for Public Consumption. And listen to Revolution Radio. We have a new chat room. Come check out our new chat room. It's a lot of fun. And it's a very good chat room. It's pretty decent. So it's worth snooping your nose in. And, you know, I could just leave, you know, but it's not that hard to get in. You're going to have to, you know, register and then send an email and give them your email and they'll write you an email. And then there's a link inside that that you click on that opens up the room and, you know, it goes that way pretty much. And there's a captcha on it. You know, you got to prove you're not a robot by pointing out the red lights or motorcycles or whatever the hell. And so, well, thanks, Navy. I appreciate it. So, let's see. Where do I want to take this since I got those out the way? There's one more at the Saker site. And let's see. There's something to do. There's two articles I'm looking at. The newest article here is interesting. I want to see who this might be by. This looks like a Russian, and it looks like it'll be good. I think I'm going to go with this one. The other one, Malia pointed it out, and it has to do with the labs in Ukraine and what's been uncovered with regard to their unstated purposes, but we all kind of know what they're up to. But this is by, I doubt I can read this. And it may not be a Russian because I'm seeing something that it's not written in Russian. He could be Serbian. In Serbia, you can, of choice, use either the Latin alphabet or the Cyrillic alphabet. So maybe he's one of those. Maybe he's a Croat. Who knows? But it's Slavic. Ljubica Malenica. Something like that. But he says, and it's right off the press, so that's why I'm going for it. After 2 months of conflict, situation inside Ukraine is somewhat clearer. However, despite the fact that we can now, with more understanding, observe what is happening on the ground, media and propaganda sources between which the border is often, between which the border is often blurred, complicate and make it difficult to build a completely clear picture of unfolding events. That's very true if you're watching Western media. If you know what to go for, you can get a clearer picture that's not so sullied. Okay, but it continues. Moreover, certain media, especially the Western ones, have completely abandoned even an attempt at objective reporting and turned, simply put, into propaganda mouthpieces without any credibility. Yep, this is the Khazars, or Khazars. This is them. They control the West. It's them. Here we go. This text will try, based on the available data from numerous sources, to offer a possible explanation for the most important events of the Russian military operation in Ukraine and to point out its importance in the context of continental security in Europe. To begin with, we will look at the number of soldiers that each side had at its disposal at the beginning of the conflict. Before any Russian soldiers crossed the Ukrainian border, both sides grouped troops for an extended period of time. While Kiev was increasing the number of its units in the Donbas area, that is, in the operational zone of what Kiev authorities called the anti-terrorist operation, Moscow was deploying troops on the border with Ukraine. According to Russian sources, before the beginning of the conflict, Kiev deployed nearly 125,000 soldiers in eastern Ukraine, close to half of its regular military forces. Now remember, too, if it's, you got 125,000 soldiers, maybe 70,000-75,000 are combat troops, because you need support troops. During the current fighting in Ukraine, plans for offensive against Donbas republics were confirmed by captured Ukrainian soldiers, with additional documentation related to these preparations being revealed by Russian troops in territories previously controlled by Kiev. All of the above can be dismissed as Russian propaganda. But it should be noted that according to Western sources, the military forces of the two Donbas republics together in 2021 numbered just over 40,000 soldiers. In general, total number of troops for Donbas republics varies, according to different sources, between 40 and 50,000 soldiers. One of the generally accepted, though blunt, rules of war points out that in case of an attack on fortified positions, it is desirable that the attacking side has three times the number of soldiers in comparison to defenders, the well-known 3-to-1 ratio. As can be seen, before the Russian operations, the ratio of conflicting troops in Donbas roughly corresponded to this rule. So it can be concluded, with a dose of caution, that Kiev really intended to conduct in Donetsk and Lugansk something similar to the Croatian Operation Storm. In terms of numbers, at the very beginning of the Russian offensive, Ukrainian army had 245,000 active duty soldiers, along with an additional 220,000 in reserve. According to the same sources, Kiev had as many as 900,000 soldiers at its disposal in the reserve. The number of members in paramilitary formations ranged from 50 to 100,000. After the start of the conflict, between 6 and 10,000 foreign mercenaries arrived in Ukraine, though numbers vary widely depending on the source. Or maybe he said wildly, either way. On the other hand, when talking about the number of troops, Russian troops on the border, before beginning of the conflict, most of the Western media agreed in the estimate of 100,000 Russian soldiers. We have already pointed out that most often used figure for military forces of Donetsk and Lugansk is close to 50,000. Generally speaking, in terms of the total number of Russian soldiers in Ukraine at the moment, figures between 150 to 200,000 soldiers are used. If we accept that 900,000 reservists is unrealistic, and consider only the lesser number, we see that at the very beginning of the conflict, more than 500,000 soldiers were available to Kiev, as opposed to a maximum of 200,000 Russians and pro-Russians. According to Zelensky's order, Ukraine mobilized its reserve units. Already on February 23rd and on April 8th, Zelensky ordered a new third wave of mobilization related to reserve officers. And as an aside, Russia did a big mobilization about 2, maybe 3 days ago. They're mobilizing a lot. Just to be on the safe side, I guess. Taking into account this information, it is clear from the very beginning, balance of forces in terms of available manpower, roughly speaking, 3-1 in favor of Ukraine. The romantic Western narrative that the conflict is between a weak but brave Ukraine and a strong but evil Russia has no basis in reality and serves exclusively as a propaganda construction. Both sides have, on several occasions so far, presented results of their military actions with information about their own and opponents' losses. Apart from Russia and Ukraine, other indirect participants in this conflict, such as the United States and its NATO satellites, have published their own estimates, but interestingly enough, only of Russian losses. According to Ukrainian sources, more than 20,000 Russian soldiers have been killed so far. On the other hand, Moscow claims that the number of Ukrainian soldiers killed in the conflict so far surpasses 25,000. According to NATO sources, after a month of fighting, total Russian losses, killed together with the wounded, missing, and captured, amounted to more than 40,000 men. The United States used similar figures in early April, as U.S. authorities claimed at the time that number of killed Russian soldiers exceeded more than 10,000. During an interview for the American CNN on 14 April, Zelensky pointed out that number of killed Ukrainian soldiers is close to 3,000. Okay. I think the last I've seen is Russian may have lost about 1,500, 2,000, maybe 2,500. That's the last I saw, and my memory's not clear, but it would be, you know, where you get your information, who you're going to believe, and all that stuff. But we get a lot of good information here. We really do. Here Mariupol comes into play. In addition to its strategic and moral significance, Mariupol is important because it provides an opportunity to try and see more clearly the number of killed in actions from the Ukrainian side. Namely, according to Russian sources, at the beginning of the siege, there was slightly more than 8,000 Ukrainian soldiers inside Mariupol. On the other hand, Kiev claims that Mariupol garrison did not number more than 3,500 people in total. So far, we know two facts. During the siege, between 1,200 and 1,500 Ukrainian soldiers surrendered to Russian troops. We also know that there are up to 2,000 Ukrainian fighters in the underground corridors of Azovstal, both ordinary soldiers and those from the Azov battalion. If we accept the Ukrainian version, we come to a paradoxical situation. Namely, during the heavy siege of Mariupol, characterized by daily battles, almost no soldier of the Ukrainian garrison died. The math is quite simple and clear. If close to 1,500 Ukrainians surrendered and close to 2,000 of them are still inside Azovstal, it can be concluded that the number of Ukrainian dead in Mariupol ranges from a few dozen to a maximum of a few hundred soldiers. From the initial garrison of 3,500 soldiers, almost all survived the full siege that began on March 2nd. That is, the siege that lasts a little more than 60 days at the time of writing. Statistically, this situation is impossible given that it tries to reconcile the fact that Russian troops occupied Mariupol completely, except for Azovstal itself, and the assumption that very few Ukrainian soldiers were killed during this conquest, perhaps only a few. Things look markedly different if Russian figures are taken into account. According to Moscow, the initial garrison numbered more than 8,000 soldiers. The two previously mentioned facts we know remain unchanged. The logical conclusion is the assumption that more than 4,000 Ukrainian soldiers died during the siege of Mariupol. If we accept this as a reasonable argument, then it further must be accepted that the number of dead with which Zelensky appears before the public are nothing but propaganda. The case of Mariupol shows that more Ukrainian soldiers were killed in this city alone than Kiev claims to have died during the entire conflict. It will be necessary to wait until the end of the conflict for true information. But for purposes of this text and consideration regarding the number of soldiers killed on both sides, we can use two military statistical rules. It must be immediately pointed out that, although generally accepted, they do not represent highly precision tools, but more of a general picture statistical aids. We have already pointed out the first, and it refers to the necessity of the attacking troops to be three times larger in number than the units which are defending fortified positions. The second rule refers to the ratio of dead and wounded soldiers within the same army. This rule points out that number of wounded soldiers in relation to the number of killed ones, roughly speaking, usually corresponds to a ratio of 3-1. The lowest ratio of wounded to dead soldiers, which the author encountered, was 2.5-1. According to U.S. sources, troops of the United States during their wars in the last three decades were able to achieve a ratio of 10-1 and sometimes even 17-1. Such a high number of wounded in relation to the number of killed soldiers is mostly attributed to progress of medical science, medical care on the battle lines, and the improvement in quality of personal protection for soldiers. At the same time, the fact that American troops fought against far, technologically speaking, inferior opponents must also be taken into account. I don't think I'm going to get to the end of this. I'll have to pick it up next time. I'm sorry I didn't get to the other one, though. This is pretty fucking long, man. I don't think I can do it. So, this is Pat Rather with Not for Public Consumption. And light, life, and love. May the spirit of goodness reach out into all space. And may the positive powers of these principles overcome all negative conditions. And may peace profound reign everywhere. So mote it be. Amen. 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 And I have to think of Ecclesiastes, too. To everything there is a season. Turn, turn, turn. A time for peace, a time for war. Things go in cycles. So it's most important just to remain peaceful through it all. And just be as positive and push out love and kindness for others. It's, you know, it's really horrifying, a lot of what's going on, but I don't castigate Russia for it, not in the least. It wasn't them. It was brought on by the opposing people. And this opposing people is represented by the people who are trying to take over the world. These are the globalists, the Khazarians, the elite. I got a pocket full of names for them. And that's why I honor Russia for doing what it's doing, because it's standing up to these bastards. And it needs to be done. And I was thinking even that I was reading on the Staker. Anyway, it was I didn't do it online yet, but the guy was talking about Operation Z, and then he said, well, and after that, maybe we'll have Operation Z Plus, where the good forces that are emblemized, that's the wrong word, by Russia, these good forces they're putting out, will spread, and we can overcome all of this, because that's what must be done for anything that's going to happen. Emblematic of. That's it. Okay, this is Pat Rabbit, and this is Not for Public Consumption. And I'll be back same time, same place next week. I hope you get something out of it. I'm not too boring. If I am, I don't care. But I just, those stupid Baltic states. Stupid Baltic states. Okay, y'all be good. Be safe. Be well. Take care. God bless. Pat Rabbit, signing off.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and...